The Jews got together on the basis of being Jews. The Irish got together on the basis of being Irish. Now, what basis are you and I going to get together on? We've got to have some kind of basis. But as soon as we mention the only basis that we've got to get together on, they trick us by telling our leaders, you know, that anything that's all black is put segregation in reverse. Isn't that what they say? So the people who are black don't want to get together because they don't want to say. Isn't that what they say? So the people who are black don't want to get together because they don't want segregation. See, the men is tricky, brothers and sisters. I mean, men is tricky. He's a master of tricks. And if you don't realize how tricky he is, he'll have you maneuvered right on back into slavery. I shouldn't say back into slavery because we're not out of it yet. These are traps that he creates. If you speak in an angry way about what has happened to our people and what is happening to our people, what does he call it? Emotionalism. Pick up on that. Here's a man who's got a rope around his neck. Well, he's screaming, you know. The crap that they're putting the rope around his neck accuses him of being emotional. You're supposed to have the rope around your neck and holler politely, you know. You're supposed to watch tradition, not shout and wake other people up. This is how you know the holler. You're supposed to be respectable and responsible when you holler against what they're doing to you. And you got a lot of black girl friends who fall for that. They say, no, we can't do it like that. You got to be responsible. You got to be respectful. And you will always be a slave. The moment you're trying to be responsible and respectful in the eyesight of your master, you'll remain a slave. But when you're in the eyesight of your master, you got to let him know you're irresponsible. And you will blow his irresponsible head. Then again, you've got another trap that he maneuvers you into. If you begin to talk about what he did to you, he'll say that's hate. He's teaching hate. Pick up on that. He won't say he didn't do it, because he can. But he'll accuse you of teaching hate. Just because you begin to spell out what he did to you. Which is an intellectual trap. Because he knows we don't want to be accused of hate. And the average black American who has been real brainwashed, he never wants to be accused of being emotional. You ever watch one of them? Yeah, I don't know. You watch it. Watch that real bourgeois black American. He never wants to show any sign of it, but you only had a seat. You can have some real soul music. And he'll sit there, you don't like it, doesn't move him. I watch him, I study him. And the reason he's trying to pretend like it doesn't move him, he knows it doesn't move him. And if it doesn't move him, well, they can't beat it, they got no soul. And he's got to pretend he has none. Just to make it for them. This is a shame. Really. And then you go a step farther, they get you again on this violence. They have another track wherein they make it look criminal. If any of us, again, who has a rope around his neck, or one thing put around his neck, if you do anything to stop the man from putting that rope around your neck, that's violence. And again, this bourgeois Negro who's trying to be polite and respectable and all, he never wants to be identified with violence. So he lets them do anything to him. And he sits there submitting to it non-violently just so he can keep his image of responsibility. He dies with a responsible image. He dies with a polite image. But he dies. The man who's irresponsible and impolite, he keeps his life. But that responsible Negro, he'll die every day. But if the irresponsible one dies, he takes some of those with him who were trying to make him die. So the era that we're living in is an era in which we see the people in the East on the rise and the people in the West on the decline. That is, the dark world is rising and the white world or Western world
having its power curtailed. This is happening, and it's happening every day.
Even the tape right there in Saigon,
in South Vietnam.
Don't you realize that 20 years ago, those little people over there didn't have a chance? All they needed would be a battleship to sail up to the coastline, and everybody over there would bow down. Yes, sir, boss. That's how they said it, same as you said it over here. But not now. Now they don't yes to nobody's boss. They get them a rifle and run boss clean on out of there.
The entire peace, the God world, is on the rise. Whether you like it or not. And if the God world rises up, it puts the white world on the spot. It puts the Western world on the spot. And it puts you and me on the spot. Why does it put us on the spot? Because although we're in the West, we're from the East. Many, many black Americans don't realize this. You are not of the West. You are in the West. You're not a Westerner. You're from the East. You're not white. You're in the white world. That doesn't make you white. You're as black as you ever were, but you're just in the white world. And next month they'll come up to show you another trick. They'll come at you and me next month with this Negro History Week, they call it. And during this week comes around once every year. And during this 1 week, they drowned us with propaganda about Negro history in Georgia and Mississippi and Alabama. Never do they take us back across the water back home. They take us down home, but they never give us a history of back home. They never give us enough information to let us know what were we doing before we ended up in Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, and some of those other prison states. They give us the impression with Negro History Week that we were cotton pickers all of our lives. Cotton pickers, orange growers, mammies and uncles for the white man in this country. This is our history when you talk in terms of Negro History Week. They might tell you about one or two people who took a peanut and made another white man rich. George Washington Carver, he was a scientist. But he died broke. He made Ford rich. So he wasn't doing anything for himself and his people. He got a good name for us. But what did we get out of it? Nothing. The master got it. It's like a dog who runs out in the woods and grabs a rabbit. No matter how hungry the dog is, does he eat it? No. He takes it back and lays it at the boss's feet. And the boss skins it, takes the meat, and gives the dog the bone. And the dog is going right on hungry again. But he didn't know. He could have gotten the rabbit and ate it for himself. And boss wouldn't even have caught any of the women. So he can outrun the boss. But it's the same way with you and me. Every contribution we make, we don't make it for our people. We make it for the man. We make it for our master. He gets the benefit from it. We die not for our people. We die for him. We don't die for our home and our house. We die for his house. We don't die for our country. We die for his country. A lot of you all were fools on the front line. Were you not?
Yes, you were.
You put on the uniform and went right up on the front line like a roaring common dog, boxing for master. And when you come back here, you have to box once you got back. So Negro History Week reminds us of this. It doesn't remind us of past achievements, but it reminds us only of the achievements we made in the Western Hemisphere under the tutelage of the white man. So that whatever achievement that was made in the Western Hemisphere that the spotlight is put upon, this is the white man's shrewd way of taking credit for whatever we accomplished. But he never lets us know of an accomplishment that we made prior to being brought here. This is another trick. The worst trick of all is when he names us Negro and calls us Negro. And then when we call ourselves that, we end up tricking ourselves. As my brother Cassius was on the screen the other night talking with Les Green about the word Negro. I wish he wouldn't have gone so fast when he was in a position to have done a very good job. And but he was right in saying that we're not Negroes. And have never been until we were brought here and made into that. We were scientifically produced by the white man. And when not to call himself a Negro. He's a product of Western civilization, not only Western civilization, but Western crime. The Negro, as he is called, or calls himself, in the West, is the best evidence that can be used against Western civilization today. One of the main reasons we're called Negro is so we won't know who we really are. And when you call yourself that, you don't know who you really are. You don't know what you are, you don't know where you came from. You don't know what is yours. And as long as you call yourself a Negro, nothing is yours. No languages, you can't lay claim to any language, not even English. You mess it up. You can't lay claim to any name, any type of name that will identify you as something that you should be. You can't lay claim to any culture as long as you use the word Negro to identify yourself. It attaches you to nothing. It doesn't even identify your color. If you talk about one of them, they call themselves white, don't they? Or they might call someone else Puerto Rican to identify them. Mind you how they do this. When they call him a Puerto Rican, they are giving him a better name. Because there is a place called Puerto Rico, you know. At least that you know where he came from. So they'll say, whites, Puerto Ricans, and Negroes. Pick up on that. That's a drag, brother. White is legitimate. It means that's what color they are. Puerto Rican tells you that there's something else, came somewhere else that they're here now. Negro doesn't tell you anything. I mean nothing, absolutely nothing. What do you identify it with? Tell me. Nothing. What do you attach it to? What do you attach to it? Nothing. It's completely in the middle of nowhere. And when you call yourself that, that's where you are, right in the middle of nowhere. It doesn't give you a language, because there's no such thing as a Negro language. It doesn't give you a country, because there's no such thing as a Negro country. It doesn't give you a culture, there's no such thing as Negro culture. Doesn't exist. The land doesn't exist. The culture doesn't exist. The language doesn't exist. And the man doesn't exist. They take you out of existence by calling you a Negro. And you can walk around in front of them all day long from then on and they act like you don't even see. Because you made yourself non-existent. It's a person who has no history. And by having no history, he has no culture. Just as a tree without roots is dead, a people without history or cultural roots also become a dead people. And when you look at us, those of us who are called Negro, we're called that because we're like a dead people. We have nothing to identify ourselves as part of the human family. You know, you take a tree, you can tell what kind of tree it is by looking at the leaves. If the leaves are gone, you can look at the bark and tell what kind it is. But when you find a tree with the leaves gone and the bark gone, everything gone, you call that a what? A stump. And you can't identify a stump as easily as you can identify a tree. And this is the position that you and I are in here in America. Formerly, we could be identified by the names we wore when we came here. When we were first brought here, we had different names. When we were first brought here, we had a different language. And these names and this language identified the culture that we were brought from, the land that we were brought from. And in identifying that, we were able to point toward what we had produced, our net worth. But once our name was taken and our language was taken and our identity was destroyed and our roots were cut off with no history, we became like a stump, something dead, a twig. Over here in the Western Hemisphere. And anybody could step on us, trample upon us, or burn us, and there'd be nothing that we could do about it. Those of you who are religious, who go to church, there are stories in the Bible that can be used easily to pretty well tell the condition of the black man in America once he became a Negro, where they refer to him in there as the lost sheep, meaning someone who's lost from his own kind. That's in, which is how you and I have been for the past 400 years. We've been in a land where we are not citizens, or in a land where they treated us as strangers. Or they have another symbolic story in there called the dry bones. And many of you have gone to church Sunday after Sunday and got, you know, the ghosts, they call it. And started talking about it. When the old preacher started singing about dry bones, you knock over benches. Just because he was singing about them bones, those dry bones, I don't know how to say that. But you never could identify the symbolic meaning of those bones. How they were dead, because they had been cut off from their own time. And our people here in America have been in the same condition as those dry bones that you sit in church singing about. But you shed more tears over those dry bones than you shed over yourself. This is what shows what happens to a people when they are cut off and stripped of everything, like you and I have been cut off and stripped of everything. We become a people like no other people. And we are a people like no other people. No other people on earth like you and me. We're unique. We're different. They say that we're Negroes, and they say that Negro means black, but yet they don't call all black people Negroes. You see the contradiction? Language. They say that we're Negro because Negro means black in Spanish, yet they don't call all black people Negroes. Something there doesn't add up. And then to get around it, they say mankind is divided up into three categories, Mongoloid, Caucasoid, and Negro. Now pick up on that. And all black people aren't Negro. They got some jet black ones that they classify as Caucasoid. But if you study very closely, all of the black ones that they classify as Caucasoid are those that still have great civilization, or still have the remains of what was once a great civilization. And the only ones that they classify as Negroid are those that they find with no evidence that they were ever civilized. Then they call them Negroid. But they can't afford to let any black-skinned people who have evidence that they formerly occupied a high seat in civilization, they can't afford to let them be called Negroid. So they take them on into the Caucasoid classification. And actually, Caucasoid, Mongoloid, and Negroid, there's no such thing. These are so-called anthropological terms that were put together by anthropologists who were nothing but agents of the colonial powers, and they were purposely given that status. They were purposely given such scientific position in order that they could come up with definitions that would justify the European domination over the African and the Asian. So immediately they invented classifications that would automatically demote these people or put them on a lesser level. All of the Caucasoids are the high level. The Negroes are kept at a low level. This is just plain trickery that their scientists engage in order to keep you and me thinking that we never were nothing, and therefore he's doing us a favor if he lets us step upward or forward in his particular society or civilization. I hope you understand what I'm saying. Now then, once you see that the condition that we're in is directly related to our lack of knowledge concerning the history of the black man, only then do you realize the importance of knowing something about the history of the black man. And the black man's history, when you refer to him as a black man, you go way back. But when you refer to him as a Negro, you can only go as far back as the Negro goes. And when you go beyond the shores of America, you can't find the Negro. So if you go beyond the shores of America in history, looking for the history of the black man, if you're looking for him under the term Negro, you won't find him. He doesn't exist. So you end up thinking that you didn't play any role in history. But if you want to take the time to do research for yourself, I think you'll find that on the African continent, there was always, prior to the discovery of America, there was always a higher level of history, a higher level of culture and civilization than that which existed in Europe at the same time. At least 5,000 years ago, they had a black civilization in the Middle East. It wasn't even Africa. In the Middle East, called the Sumerians. Now when they show you pictures of the Sumerians, they're trying to make you think that they were white people. But if you go and read some of the ancient manuscripts, or even read between the lines on some of the current writers, you'll find that the Sumerian civilization was a very dark-skinned civilization, and it existed prior even to the existence of the Babylonian Empire, right in the same area where you find Iraq and the Tigris, Euphrates, rivers there. It was a black-skinned people who lived there, who had a high state of culture way back then. And at a time even beyond theirs, there was a black-skinned people in India who were black, just as black as you and I, called Dravidians. They inhabited the subcontinent of India even before the present people that you see living there today. And they had a high state of culture. And the present people of India even looked upon them as gods. Most of their statues, if you notice, have pronounced African features. You go right to India today, in their religion, which is called Buddhism, and they give all their Buddhas the image of a black man with his lips and his nose and his, even show his hair all curled up on his head. His hair didn't, they didn't curl it up. It was born, he was born that way. And these people lived in that area before the present people of India lived there. They lived, the black man lived in the Middle East before the present people who are now living there lived there. And he had a high culture and a high civilization, to say nothing about the oldest civilization of all that he had in Egypt along the banks of the Nile. And when and in Carthage in northwest Africa, another part of the continent, and at a later date in Mali and Ghana and Fungi and some of the Moorish civilization, all of these civilizations existed on the African continent before America was discovered. Now, the black civilization that shook the white man up the most was the Egyptian civilization. And it was a black civilization. It was along the banks of the Nile, which runs through the heart of Africa. But again, this tricky white man, and he's tricky. And many of you didn't want to say this. It's not a racist thing. Some of them might be tricky, but all of my men are tricky. And his civilization shows his trickiness. This tricky white man that was able to take the Egyptian civilization, write books about it, put pictures in those books, make movies for television and the theater. So skillfully done until he had even convinced other white people that the ancient Egyptians were white people themselves. They were African. They were from Africa as you and I. And he even gave the clue away when he made his movie King Solomon's Mines. And he showed the Watusis, you know, with their black cells. And he outright admitted in there that they look like the ancient pharaohs of ancient Egypt. Which means that the white man himself, he knows that the black man had this high civilization in Egypt. Which today, the remains show, the black man in that area had mastered mathematics, had mastered architecture, had put the building, the art of building, science of building things, had even mastered astronomy. The pyramid, as the white scientists admit, is constructed in such a position on this earth to show that the black people who were the architects of it had a knowledge of geography that was so vast they knew the exact center of the earth's landmass, because the base of the pyramid is located in the exact center of the earth's landmass, which it could not have been so situated by its architect unless the architect in that day had known that the earth was round and knew how much land there was in all directions from where you were heading. And the pyramid was built so many thousand years ago that they don't even know the exact time that it was built. But they do know that the people who brought it into existence had mastered the science of building, had mastered the various sciences of the earth, and mastered astronomy. I read one where one scientist said that the architect of the pyramid had built a shaft that went outward from the center of the pyramid, where in the place where it mounts in the sky was the location where a star, a blue star, I think it's some kind of star, made an appearance only once every 50,000 years. Now they said that this architect's knowledge of astronomy was so vast that he evidently had access to histories or records that spotlighted the existence of a star that made its appearance at a certain spot in the sky only once every 50,000 years. Now, he could not have known this unless he had records going back beyond 50,000 years. Yet the pyramid is a living witness today that the black people who were responsible for bringing it into existence had this kind of knowledge. And when you read the opinions of the white scientists about the pyramid and the builders of the pyramid, they don't make any secret at all over the fact that they marvel over the scientific ability that was in the possession of those people way back then. They had mastered chemistry to such extent they could make hints that the dye has not, the color doesn't fade right. The first slave ship to come here was piloted by an Englishman named John Hawkins. And John Hawkins' ship was called Jesus, the good ship Jesus. And this is the boat that was used. It's in history. They used Jesus to bring him here. And then used him to keep you here, too. When our people got here and found out what they had gotten into, they didn't want to stay. Many of them started looking for that ship that brought them here. And the slaves have a whole spiritual which they sing, steal away to Jesus. Steal away home. And you think that they were talking about some man that got hung on the cross 2,000 years ago. Whereas they were talking about a ship. They wanted to steal away and get on board that ship that was named Jesus. So that they could go back home on the mother continent, the African continent, where they had been tricked and brought from. But you got poor Negroes today who have been brainwashed. You see Mississippi here talk about steal away to Jesus. They talk about going up yonder, dying, and going somewhere. Show them how your mind is all messed up. They were talking about a boat. Now, all the interesting was all, you can have all this world, but give me Jesus. They weren't talking about that man that died supposedly on the cross. They were talking about a boat. You can have this world, this Western world, this evil, corrupt, run-down, low-down Western world, but give me Jesus, the boat. But give me the ship, Jesus, so I can go back home where I'll be among my own kind. This is what the spiritual came from. But they got it in the church today. That old dumb preacher has your mind, yes, dumb. As you're in my mind, so messed up, we think that Jesus is somebody that died on the cross. We sit there foaming at the mouth, talking about you can have all this world, but give me Jesus. And the man took all this world and gave you Jesus, and that's all you got is Jesus. There were three people involved in the crime that was committed against us. The slave trader, the slave master, but the third one that they don't tell you anything about, the slave master. You've read about the slave trader, and you've read about the slave master. In fact, you know the slave master. He's still in his hands. But you never read the history, in history, the part played by the slave maker. You can't make a wise man a slave. You can't make a warrior a slave. When you and I came here, or rather when we were brought here from a society that was highly civilized. Our culture was at the highest level, and we were warriors. We knew no fear. How could they make us slaves? They had to do the same thing to us that was done, that we do to a horse. When you take a horse out of the wild, you don't just jump on him and drive him, or put a bit in his mouth and use him to plow with. No. You got to break him in first. Once you break him in, then you can ride. Now the man who rides it is not the man who breaks him in. It takes a different type of man to break him in than it takes to ride. The other man that can ride him can't break him in. It takes a cruel man to break him in. A mean man. A heartless man. A man with no feeling. And this is why they took the role of the slave maker out of history. It was so criminal that they don't even dare to write about it. To tell what was done to you and me to break us in and break us down to the level that we're on today. Because when you find the role that that slave maker played, I'm telling you, you find it hard to forget and forgive. You find it hard. I can't forgive the slave trader nor the slave master. You know I can't forgive the slave master. The people weren't brought. Our people weren't brought right here to this country. They were first dropped off in the West Indian Islands, in the Caribbean. Most of the slaves that were brought from Africa were dropped off first in the Caribbean, West Indian Islands. Why? This was the breaking in ground. They would break the men down there, and as they broke the men, then they would bring the ones whose spirit had been broken onto America. They had all kinds of methods of breaking the men. They bred fear into them, for one thing. I read in one book how the slave maker used to take a pregnant woman, black woman, and make her watch as her man would be tortured and put to death. One old slave maker had trees that he planted in positions where he would bend them and tie them, and then tie the hand of a black man to one and the hand to the other and his legs to two more. And he cut the rope. And when he cut the rope, that tree would snap up and pull the arm of the black man right out of his side. Pull him up into the four different parts. I'll show you books when you read it. They read about it. And they made the pregnant black women stand there and watch as they did it, so that all this grief and fear that they felt would go right into that baby, that black baby that was yet to be born. It would be born afraid, born with fear. You got it in you right now. Right now, you still got it. When you get in front of that blue-eyed thing, you start to itch it, don't you? And you don't know why. It was bred into you. But when you find out how they did it, you can get it out of it and put it right back in there. Now, I'm not talking racism. I'm not talking racism.